Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see everyone here today. If you're visiting with us, we're glad to have you with us today. Thank you, Steve, for taking care of our singing this morning, choir, for doing a fantastic job. We do have someone with us for the very first time today. Branch Frank Wilkie is with us for the very first time. We're going to ask Dylan and Jill if they would to come down and bring, I don't know if you go by Branch or Frank. Which one do we?
Branch.
Okay. All right. Turn around here and let everybody see this fine-looking fella. Okay. All right. Here, I'll let Mom have since you got him. Okay, thank y'all. We're glad to have you with us today. All right. Thank you, ladies. Okay, I want to invite you to turn with us to the sixth chapter of the book of Isaiah. Sixth chapter of the book of Isaiah. This is a pretty familiar Old Testament passage of Scripture. But I hope and pray that we leave with a greater insight about it than we have ever had in our lives before. I hope it brings us to a greater sense of who God is and what God is today, in spite of everything that is going on in our world today. We live in a nation of uncertainty. I don't think that'd be wrong to say, would it? There is a lot of political and a lot of social unrest in the America that you and I live in. This is absolutely not going to be a political message. However, politics plays into all of our lives some way or another. And America is in trouble. I don't think nobody disagree with me about that. And this is absolutely not anything to do with which side you want to be on or anything like that at all. I want us to realize who God is, just as Isaiah is going to. So in Isaiah chapter number 6, verse number 1, I'm just going to read a couple of verses really to introduce us into this passage and see what God is saying and how it applies, really applies so strongly to you and I today. Chapter number 6, verse number 1, Isaiah. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings. Now, the King James says twain, but I'm going to use the word two here so everybody understands what I'm talking about. With two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he did fly. And we're going to look on a little bit further as we go on into this. But I want to really get you to thinking about what is your thoughts about the nation that we live in today and what's going on in the world today. We've always been a Christian nation to some degree. There has always been that Judeo-Christian influence that has always influenced America greatly. Don't think anybody would argue with that. And America's relatively a young country when you look in, around and see the age of a lot of other countries and places. And we don't really understand even what it was like in Isaiah's day, because I want us to go back and look and see what was going on in Isaiah's day when he records this of what transpired and took place, and how it will help you and I as we journey along through life. Uriah had been the king. He's the 10th king of Judah, or the 10th king. And if you were to have a ranking of good kings, he would definitely be in the top five, probably the top three, really. This man had been a godly man, and you can read in 2 Chronicles in the 26th chapter. It'll give you a pretty good little outline of what kind of king that this man had been. But he had reigned, he did have his faults, and we'll talk about that in a minute too. But he had reigned there for 52 years. So remember, when you've got someone that has been in this position for 52 years, the vast majority of those people that was there did not ever know what it was like to have another king. Also, this king had been a very good king in this time that he had ruled over Judah. They had had a lot of prosperity. They had had a lot of peace and safety because of the kind of king that he was. He had strengthened their military might, done all kinds of things to better the life for the people. And along towards the end was when you read about the Assyrian Empire that is really growing, and they are going through and just conquering all of these lands and everything. Well, for the most part, at one time, all of these people feel pretty safe with the king that they have, King Uzziah. They're pretty safe about everything because they have so much confidence in this man. Let me just give you an idea, okay, about him. If you look at chapter number 26 of 2 Chronicles, and I'm just going to kind of read portions of these verses, okay? But verse number 4 out of 26 says, "And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord." If you look in verse 5, it says, "God made him to prosper." If you look in verse 8, you'll see where that it says that his name spread abroad, even into the entering of Egypt. They considered him a strong and mighty person. Verse 10 tells us that he had dug a lot of wells, he had many cattle, he had a host of fighting men. He had a very strong army. He had prepared shields and spears and bows for this army that he had. And I don't really know if anybody knows exactly, but the Bible does. The Bible calls it engines. And that's a Hebrew word that means to propel, actually. And Uzziah had actually incorporated into the walled part of the city some type of apparatus that would catapult large boulders towards enemies that was coming. And, for lack of any other way to explain it, some type of apparatus that was, I guess, like the Gatling gun of shooting arrows. Shot multiple arrows. I mean, these people felt very safe. They felt very good about their king and who was leading their country. Well, then Uzziah, the fault of him was that he got so high and mighty and he got so proud of himself that he decides at one time that he will just go into the temple and burn incense. Well, the burning of incense was reserved only for the priest in that day. But Uzziah thinks because he has made so much acclaim and so much of a name for himself that surely God won't even have a problem with it, and his people won't either. But he got there. There's, I think, 80-something priests that tries to stop him, to keep him from doing this. He goes ahead, and immediately then the Bible tells us that his forehead, he breaks out into leprosy. And he spends the last 10 years exiled from the temple, and really for the most part even from his people. He's a leper, and he brought all of this on himself. But yet he was still considered a good king. That was his major fault and major mistake that he had made in life. But when this king died, evidently there must have been at that time for all of them, it must have been a great sense of unrest. Can you imagine of going through 50 years and feeling real good about how everything was and how everything was going on, and then that great sense of loss? We can probably, most everybody here, now I don't remember it because I was born that year, but it was a very sad day in the history of America when John F. Kennedy was shot. He had done a lot for America. Stood up to Russia when they had put the missiles in Cuba. That was a very frightful time for most all of America. And then Kennedy has him to back down, and then all of a sudden Kennedy is assassinated, and it's the end of that Camelot era that they called it. And many people in America was very saddened by that. And we can understand that. Well, it would be the same sense of what was going on in this day. Here was this king that had stood up to the Assyrians and so many of his opponents around him. And people had great confidence in him. And so evidently when this king had died, I'm satisfied there was a lot of people thinking about what in the world are we going to do? Now, I know that we've not had no great leader to die or anything like that, but there it's still a time of unrest in our society today. We don't know what's going on. It seems like, you know, there's a lot of bickering within America. Again, irregardless of whichever side you want to take about things, that's your choice. That's what makes America what it is. But a lot of problems, and we see these problems. Now, I want to beg you to hang with me, and you're going to understand what it is that's happening here, and why I wanted you and I to look at this passage and what it says to you and I. So then we have this where I begin. It says, "And in the year that King Uzziah died." Well, most of the time, you know what, we read that and everybody says, well, it's just Isaiah's way of marking a particular era of time. It is far more than Isaiah just marking a particular era of time. He is letting you and I know that there was great distress probably in that land when the year that Uzziah died, and Isaiah himself had come along during his reign. This was the only king that he knew. And he probably was thinking to himself, what in the world is going to happen to our people now? What is going to happen to us? You've got Assyrians that's coming in and conquering and taking everybody out. And this is going to happen to us. So the people were very much afraid. But listen what he says. What the Bible is telling you and I, that in the year that King Uzziah died, then he goes on to say, I saw the Lord. Now are you with me? I saw the Lord. The king had died, and yet Isaiah sees this vision when he is in the temple, perhaps praying, worshiping, however he was doing. He said, I saw the Lord. You know what he didn't say? He didn't say, I saw King Uzziah somewhere out there and I remembered about him. He said, I saw the Lord. If you'll just hang with me, you'll understand all this, because the day and time which you and I live, irregardless of all of the unrest that may be in the world today, not just in America, but worldwide, I pray that you and I could come to the same place that Isaiah came to and not be looking at some kind of leadership, but rather looking and saying, I saw the Lord. I saw the Lord, because that's what Isaiah saw. I want to read to you a quote from a man that I love to read his writings. I love to listen to some of his messages and stuff. But Warren Wiersbe said this: a great king may have left his throne on earth, but the greatest king was still seated on the throne of heaven. And that's where you and I need to realize today, in spite of all that goes on in our world today, in spite of everything that goes on in America today, God is still seated in the throne of heaven. And Isaiah said, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne. He said he was high and lifted up. Listen, they may have lifted old King Uzziah very highly. That's why he became a very proud and haughty man in his life. But Isaiah said that I saw something greater than Uzziah. I saw something higher and lifted up way further than he had ever been in his life. He saw the high and mighty God sitting on the throne. And then it goes on and it says some things that's perhaps hard for you and I to understand, but really and truly it's not that hard to understand. He said, not only did I see the Lord, and not only did I see him sitting high and lifted up, but he said his train filled the temple. And what that simply says to you and I, that it was the presence of God everywhere in that place. And listen, irregardless today of the world and how people thinks and how people lives their lives, God is still everywhere today. Everywhere. Oh, somebody said, well, we've left God out of this and we've left God out of that. We've moved God out of the schools. We've moved God out of whatever you want to choose it to be. I want to tell you what, if you get a glimpse of God, I guarantee you he is still there because his presence fills everywhere. Now, we may have pushed him out in our own way, but you're not going to push God out of somewhere that he isn't going to be pushed out of. He is everywhere. He encompasses everything that you and I live in and everything that you and I know today. So he said his train filled the temple, and also it talks about how the smoke filled the temple again, and that's just the ever-moving awe of God and presence of God. God's presence was there to give Isaiah encouragement in the day that he lived, to make Isaiah realize, Isaiah, quit looking to an earthly king and start looking to a heavenly king. Does that not say something to you and I today? Does that not speak to America today? Does that not speak to the world today? I believe it. I believe it does. Is this story, is this just something in here? Is this just something that God left in the book of Isaiah? Just to remind y'all and I of a cute, sweet story about seeing God lifted up high? Or does it still speak to the people of God today? I believe it still speaks to us. I believe it says something to you and I. It's not just recorded to take up space in a book somewhere. Well, then he goes on and it sees this six-winged figure. Some type of angelic being, creation of God, to add this sixth set of wings. And it says, now listen, you can read a lot of commentaries and stuff and you'll find all kind of ideas about what the covering of each one of these things and what these wings were doing and what they mean. But Alec Moyer said this, and I think his is probably what I like the best. He said he covers his feet in so understanding that it's never of our own choosing and our own direction and our own path that we take, but that we cover our feet in order that we accept God's plan and God's path in our life. I think that's pretty good myself. Said he covered his eyes. What is it? It's so that our vision would not be our own vision, but that our vision would be the vision of God, that we would be obedient to him and go in the direction that he leads us in, and let him be the one that gives us the vision and what we need to do. And then with the other two, that says that they were just flying around. They were continually in movement and motion, and nothing was coming out of their mouth but holy, 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 a super superlative of what they could only cry out about this God that they had envisioned and seen sitting on this throne. And they could say nothing but holy, holy, holy. And all of a sudden, in this too, that was verse number 3 when they had cried, holy, holy, holy. The post of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Now, up until this point, up until this actual point, God is yet to say anything. And yet there's this great shaking. There's this great moving. There's this great vision. Sometimes people will say this, and I've heard this so many times, and you probably have too, and you may have said it. If God would just speak to me. Remember what I said? God has yet to have spoken anything. And yet Isaiah is in awe at what he just simply is seeing. God has not spoken anything. And so listen, sometimes if you and I would just catch a hold, like I said last Sunday, and look and see what God is using to get our attention. And then view what it is that God is showing us. You might be surprised what you walk away with. Isaiah is having this great vision, and all this is taking place. This shaking, this moving of God. Listen, sometimes, I think all of us sometimes could say, God will shake you. Do you believe that? I do. God will shake you. He'll shake you. He'll shake me. He'll shake the world. And whether the world grabs hold of who it is that's shaking it will be up to them a lot of times. I wonder if those that may have been around in Isaiah's day, I wonder if anybody else felt this, saw this, whatever. I don't know. But Isaiah certainly did. I've said this many times. When you encounter God, you're going to get out of the things of being able to always explain it. Because if you can explain everything, if you can totally explain everything that's ever happened in your life, then I doubt that you've ever really had a true encounter with God, because He gets out of the area in the realm of the explained. When you truly encounter God, you encounter things that within yourself you just can't explain, and you just have to say that it was nothing more than the hand of God moving and working. And accept it as that sometimes. I believe that's where Isaiah was at. But then it goes on, and all of this caused Isaiah to do something that hopefully this would happen to every one of us. Isaiah, when he's having this vision and all of this is taking place, Isaiah then all of a sudden says, woe is me. Not woe is everybody else. Though he had said, if you go back and read the first six chapters, he'd come pretty strong to his people. But Isaiah didn't say, woe is everybody else. You bunch of sorry heathens over there. Everything you're doing is wrong. I've seen you. I've seen your sin. And I know what you're doing. And God knows. And God's judgment is coming on you. Isaiah said, woe is me. Woe is me. You see how personal it becomes? See, it's so easy to look at everybody else, and it'd been so easy to just, for old Isaiah, to just look out there and say, well, woe is everybody else. Yo, you're in trouble. But Isaiah said, woe is me. He said, I'm a man of unclean lips. And he said, he said, for I'm undone because I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. He said he had had a vision of God. He had caught a vision of God. And actually, Isaiah probably thinks that he's going to die. He has seen a vision of God, and no man lived to tell about seeing God. But then something miraculous else happens. One of those seraphims that's flying around takes tongs and goes over there and reaches into the altar of God. A fiery tong or a fiery... This... I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this. This was a holy moment that happened and transpired in this man's life. Here he is. He's realized his own sinfulness. And God goes through this seraphim and takes these tongs and takes this hot coal and brings it out and places it on his lip. And listen, do you know what that is? That's the same thing that Paul talked about when he talked about the refining fire of God. You remember the old Methodist song? Refining fire goes through my heart, illuminate my soul. Do you know how a refiner knew? Listen, if you leave something in there too long, you'll destroy it. If you're refining silver, if you leave it too long, you'll destroy it. Do you know how a refiner knows when it's time to take it out of the fire? When he sees his reflection in that silver. That's the illumination. When he can see the illumination there. When God has refined you and I. And what is refining of silver? It's the removal of the imperfection. And when God refines you and I, he brings us to a place where that reflection is of Christ. And people sees Christ in us. Those coals was placed on his lips. It was a refining fire that took place in his life. When he laid it upon my mouth, he said, lo, this has touched thy lips, and thine iniquities, listen, thine iniquities are taken away, and thy sin has been purged. When you and I have come through the refining fire of Christ, our iniquities is taken away, our sins has been purged, and we're made right with God. And we should find ourselves in the very place that Isaiah found his place in. Now's when the Lord speaks. Now's when you really hear the voice of God. Listen to what he said. I heard the voice of the Lord saying, who shall I send and who will go for us? Then said I, here am I, send me. That was Isaiah's response. Listen, God's glory and who God is transcends all of the problems that we have in this world or that we face today. God is way bigger than any political or social problem that America faces or the world faces. God is bigger. Remember, Isaiah said, I looked and I behold something far greater than you lie. Ever was. And Isaiah becomes a willing servant to be obedient to God. And no matter what goes on in your life, or what goes on in my life, or what goes on in the life of America, God is still sitting on the throne. He is still just as much a reality today as he was when Isaiah saw him. He's still high and lifted up. He still covers the face of this world. You remember what we sang and opened with? What did it say? Didn't it say something about kings and kingdoms? What did it say they'd do? They'd all pass away. They'd be gone. But that name Jesus, it ain't going nowhere. Nowhere. So no matter how much unrest is in your life or in the life of America or in the life of the world, God is still God. Jesus is still Jesus. He's still in the saving business. He's still in the transforming business. And he's still in the business of calling people to serve, just as he did Isaiah. There's a lot of things going on in our church, and I wonder how many people's really willing to say, Lord, here am I. Let me. Here am I.
Oh, somebody said, well, you know, they're talking about sending a prophet to prophesy to a whole big old nation of people. It was. It was. That part of it, you got exactly right. But you still don't think it applies to just serving the Lord? Simple service to the Lord, the small things sometimes. The things where, you know, you're not going to have a book named after you in the Bible. You're not going to get a lot of probably honor out of it. Probably may not even be nobody pat you on the back and say, good job. But the Lord knows. And sometimes it's just the small things that, you know, so, do you know what? Somebody's got to do those. Somebody's got to do just the little things sometimes that don't get much recognition. And then there's going to be somebody that's going to have to do the job of Isaiah. And they may get a lot of recognition. They may get a lot of name calling. But I will assure you of this. If it's in God's service, both are just as important. Stand with me if you would. If you're here today, you're not a Christian, never come to know the Lord, I want to give you that opportunity today. If He spoke to you, we invite you to come while we sing this verse of song.